Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
No sleep till...
Just seeing his picture, you can see a bandage over his right ear, just waiting behind the stage, presumably. They're saying, fight, fight, and pointing their fists.
So that was last night. We managed to get into the arena. In fact, we got in just in time to see the arrival of President Trump. And do we have at least some stories to tell? I will tell you that Bobby and I had been working basically all day just to get through security yesterday. It was crazy. So, yes, Andrew McKay here for the Pensacola Morning News on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 from Milwaukee, day two of the convention coverage. And remember on Monday I told you that I felt like it was very safe, very secure. Like there were, I mean, you can't count them, so many police. I've never been in a place where I've seen so many police visibly around. We keep running into the biker gangs of bike cops, and they're literally everywhere. And it'll be, you know, 10 or 15 of them all roaming together, moving around, putting on a show of force. I'm honestly not quite sure what they're doing, other than riding around and being seen, which is fine. Okay, which is fine. You know, show of force is an important part of discouraging people from doing stupid stuff. But yesterday what happened is right after the show, we had not been into the convention arena itself. And so we thought, well, let's just run over there. You know, nothing really goes on much at the RNC until the evening. That's when the big stuff is. There's stuff during the day. You know, I mean, yesterday you had the J.D. Vance nomination and, you know, the official nomination of President Trump. But nothing much is happening during the day. It's the evening is when, you know, everybody really gets together. But we thought, let's just go look, you know, let's just go kind of get familiar with the scene. So we go, and all I can tell you is we're driving, and then we're not driving anymore. And there was no getting there from here. And we sat in traffic for about an hour at about, about 11 o'clock, and we finally said, well, this is stupid. We'll just go back to the hotel. And so then we went back to the hotel, well, and
we sat for an hour.
Yeah, just not moving.
Still very, very far away from where we had a parking pass.
Right, so, and we have a parking space inside the perimeter. Well, outside the perimeter, we thought. We'd learn more about that in a minute. So then we went back to the hotel. We, you know, I think we both took a nap. We, did, because that's morning. That's a really common thing for morning show people to do. We, got up, ate lunch, and eventually said, you were ready to go back to the, you know, convention. Well, let's try to time it to when people aren't going to be going. And we figured if everybody's already kind of in at the events, which would be like maybe 5, we'll go at like 6 or maybe even 7 and just, you know, we'll kind of get there and see when things have died down. Even worse traffic. There's literally one road that goes into across it, because it's within rivers. It's like, you know, there's lots of rivers in Milwaukee, and half the bridges are closed because the Secret Service have closed them, and there's cops above, and there's, you know, boats down beneath, and you just cannot get through. A lot of places that your GPS tries to tell you to go, you cannot go that way right now, and it's just not updated for that. But we sat in traffic moving basically one car length every 4 or 5 lights through an intersection, and eventually it had gotten to be about 8 o'clock, 8:15, and I said, well, Bobby, one of us got to get in the convention at night. So you want to drive and try to get to the parking place? And I'll just walk. And so he's like, yeah. So we get out, and what I discovered is, after the assassination attempt on Saturday, they had decided to expand the perimeter. So what was originally the checkpoints that we told you about Monday morning, they added a farther out perimeter, and they were doing full body cavity searches on the cars. On the cars, okay? So the cars were hoods up, trunks up, dogs sniffing everywhere. And that process is slow, really, really. I mean, it's a couple of minutes per car at least. And so I said, well, you're going to go through that, and I'll meet you there when we get there. And it didn't take you all that long to get through after that. But then you have to walk. And once you get inside that car perimeter, it's like a ghost town. It's like a movie where the people are all gone and the city is still there. They're just nobody. The streets were empty. There's no parking on the streets. It's, you know, you ever see these post-apocalyptic movies where, you know, like, you know, I don't know, I Am Legend, you know, where Will Smith is playing golf.
It had a zombie feel.
Yeah. You know, he's playing golf off of the back of the aircraft carrier station in New York Harbor because there's nobody there, and he's driving through the streets because there's nobody there. That's what it was like. I mean, there were a few people, but mostly there was nothing. It was creepy. And also, most of the businesses are closed because nobody can get to them, or they can't get supplies, or their employees can't get it. I don't know, all the combination of all of this stuff. So we finally managed to get... There are only certain places you can get through the perimeter to as a person, and there's a fence everywhere. And so, go back, sir. You need to go back three blocks that way to get through that fence. So, the Secret Service again, and lots and lots and lots of police and bag search and all that. And we eventually got into the arena, perfectly timed for the arrival of John David Trump. What's wrong with my brain? Donald John Trump. And I had 2 hours of sleep last night. So if I stumble over my words today, I'm not catching Biden. I'm just low sleep. So we finally get in for the arrival of him. And he's, you know, you probably watch it, but you saw that he had the very noticeable bandage over his ear. I would say that the president's demeanor was different. He pumped his fist. The crowd pumped their fist. They said, fight, fight. He's got a little box off to the... It's not on the floor where all the delegates are. It's just behind that in the first level of the arena, low seating. And there's kind of a box for dignitaries. You know, him, his family, you know, Tucker Carlson was in there. And then behind that is more spectators and news people. And then you got all the boxes for all the, you know, CNN and ABC and Fox News and all that. And then you have us, like, at the very top rafters overlooking the convention. Basically, if we'd have had binoculars, it would have been nice. The Jumbotron is big, but, you know, watching it from a big distance way up in the arena, you know, I haven't decided yet what we're going to do for coverage today, but it was different. But it was neat being in there and seeing the energy and hearing it and hearing the crowd roar and chant and dance and when they're playing the bands and all that stuff. But I would say about President Trump, he seemed different to me. He didn't speak. You know, he doesn't speak. You know, the vice presidential candidate didn't speak yesterday. You know, there was a moment we thought maybe Trump was going to speak yesterday afternoon, but that did not manifest. And he just seemed... I know it's going to be a weird way to say it. He seemed like a normal person. He didn't have the demeanor that Trump often has, either the sort of stern, fierce demeanor or the showman's I'm here to do this thing kind of demeanor. He was just there, relaxed, I thought, calm, smiling and enjoying the crowd, but not showmaning for the crowd, if that makes sense. And so... that was my observation. The rest of the day, basically, we watched the speeches, of course. We'll talk about that throughout the show today. And then went to afterwards. What happens is the state delegations all have these parties, and they're basically put on by people who are probably running for governor. You know, like tonight, Wilton Simpson is going to be putting one on. And last night, it was CFO Jimmy Petronas, and got a chance to talk with him a little bit. And, you know, he gave a little bit of a speech there for a while. And so we'll, you know, talk about some of that stuff throughout the night. But basically, it's not a lot of activity through the day. Some panels and discussions and forums and things like that. Then, you know, people eat, and then there's the evening session. And then every state kind of goes its own way. If you can, you know, they're having their events or whatever, and then you do it all over again the next day. So that's the inside what happens at the convention. And, you know, there are certain procedural things that happen along the way, like the votes that took place yesterday. Obviously, we had the, you know, the big news, so to speak, from yesterday was the fact that you had J.D. Vance being the one that winds up getting the vice presidential nomination.
Are we ready to nominate a vice president? How about you, Ohio?
Yeah!
It is therefore my honor to nominate Ohio Senator J.D. Vance for the office of Vice President of the United States of America.
This is the Lieutenant Governor of Ohio, John Husted. And then, you know, they bring out the, I forget if it was him or if the secretary, but anyway, they bring, you know, they start doing the actual vote.
Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the motion that Senator J.D. Vance be nominated by acclamation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, and the motion is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
I'm not sure that was without objection. Sounded to me like there were about 20 people who objected, but, you know, that's fine. They signified. What did she say? She said some weird version of it.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Signify by saying aye. Look, everybody stumbles in their speech. I think I already have this morning, so, you know, it's no big deal. And, you know, overwhelming acclamation is the nominee, and that's nothing special about that. Of course, earlier, slightly earlier, we had the actual nomination process for all of the states going through their delegates. Elise Stefanik, a representative from New York.
It is my honor, as representative for New York's 21st Congressional District, House Republican Conference Chair, on behalf of the 91 New York delegates to the Republican National Convention, we proudly cast all 91 votes for President Donald J. Trump.
And the way this usually works is, in case you're not familiar, don't remember from prior years, they go alphabetically until they get to what would be the decisive number to put them over the top to win the majority in order to be the nominee. And then they typically give it to the home state to do that honor. And, of course, the home state for Florida. And with 125 votes in this process, Eric Trump, his son, is the one who kind of does the announcement.
Madam Secretary, and everybody in this great city, on behalf of our entire family, and on behalf of the 125 delegates in the unbelievable state of Florida, we hereby nominate every single one of them for the greatest president that's ever lived, and that's Donald J. Trump. Hereby declaring him the Republican nominee for President of the United States of America.
And who can quibble with the son saying his dad was the best president ever? I mean, it's not, you know, it's not really a fact claim. It's, you know, it's a dad claim, and it's the exact thing that a kid is supposed to say about his dad. So J.D. Vance, who, you know, interesting pick. You know, obviously he was one of the ones that everybody kind of thought would be one of the finalists. Didn't know whether it might be Doug Burgum from North Dakota, the governor. Didn't know whether it might be Marco Rubio. My own impression, I actually thought it might be Rubio just because, you know, the first Hispanic American to be nominated, although, you know, Cuban ancestry, of course, he would not care about that and wouldn't think. But it is, you know, these things count to some people. Obviously, foreign policy is a great strength of his, although his, you know, foreign policy views are not all that well aligned with John Trump's policy views. And, you know, certainly very well respected by conservatives and
people in
general. Not to
throw you off
on it,
but just a quick blurb of what do you think, how much do you think them being from the same state might have had something to do with that?
You know, I wonder, because it's not a deal breaker. Somebody can declare residency somewhere else, but they would have had to in order to make sure the vice president wasn't split, you know, with the other party. That's how that works in under the Constitution. A system which is incredibly stupid, that made sense at one time, and just, it's kind of like a glitch that never got fixed, basically. You know how they have these glitch bills that go in and fix the dumb things that they overlooked last year in bill drafting? That's kind of what this is. It just doesn't need to exist anymore. I mean, you know, Cheney literally established residency in Wyoming just to make sure it didn't happen with him and Bush. So it's just, it's a dumb thing. But I don't know. I'd like to believe that wasn't the issue. Then again, you know, pulling Ohio into the ticket, you know, Pence was from Indiana. Yeah. My one thought about Vance is, I mean, he's obviously very young at 39. He's eligible. You know, you only have to be 35. He's obviously got a lot of interesting background with his, like, venture capital stuff and his law degree and his, you know, being a Marine and obviously being in the Senate, although not long. You know, he's kind of got Obama-esque experience in the Senate, you know, just a couple of years before he ran for president. But, you know, it's a fine pick. You know, he's a capable guy. He's a good orator. I think what Trump was going for was somebody who's relatively closer to him on viewpoint, which was not true in, say, 2016 when J.D. Vance was a never-Trumper. So I guess never-Trumper became, probably never-Trumper became, wait a minute, this guy's actually okay, kind of, you know, and now he's on the ticket, which is a pretty substantial change over the course of a short 8 years. But, yeah. And
to remind people, once again, Biden being the VP pick for Obama, Biden was the one that, he wasn't critical of Obama, but he said some very extremely controversial things.
About race and articulateness, right. And you know, and when he gave his big speech in 2000, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, I don't know how well J.D. Vance, what he does to really balance the ticket other than geographically. You know, Pence obviously brought in whole elements of the Republican base that Trump didn't appeal to. That was the idea of Pence, is he's the solid, experienced, stable. He's been a governor, and you know, he's been in the in the House, and also he has a certain kind of you know, calm gravitas or something like that. And you know, he was the stable one to balance the kind of, you know, boisterous, if you want to call him that, Trump. Well, you know, we all know how that turned out in the end, and he obviously doesn't feel the need to do that with the ticket this time around. So why not pick somebody he thinks might be able to carry on his legacy, which I'm assuming is what he sees in J.D. Vance. But we'll, you know, see as the rest of the convention unfolds. I'm Andrew McKay. We're broadcasting live from Milwaukee all this week as we are here at the convention for the RNC. Bobby Rossi is with me here in Milwaukee, very capably helping me. I really appreciate that, Bobby, all the great work that you have done. And we've got John Pickens is back off of a couple of days being away, and it's good to have you back, John, as well. And we'll keep talking about this in just a bit here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
So I always say that Frontier Motors has been serving the Pensacola community, and if you didn't know me, you might think I just use words lightly, but I really don't. I mean, as a philosopher, I use words very deliberately and mean the words that I use, and so when I say they serve, I mean that. For example, if you go to Frontier, when you look at a car, you're going to get a price sheet and you're going to get a Carfax, and a Carfax is a great resource. It's not the end-all be-all of everything about the maintenance and service history for the car, because it kind of depends on voluntary reporting. That's why I recommend you get a good used vehicle inspection from a mechanic you trust. But you get it from Frontier. But if you don't go to Frontier, like you go to, you know, Jim Bob's corner lot somewhere and you're going to buy a car and they don't give you a Carfax, or like off of, you know, Facebook Marketplace or something, no problem. Take the VIN, give it to Frontier. Frontier will run a Carfax for you for free. Why? Because they can, because it helps, because it's nice, because it's being a good neighbor, because why not? And so when I say that they have been serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the big buffalo on Beverly Parkway, I mean that.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Welcome back. 529 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. In the newsroom this morning, at least I hope, I can't see him from where I am in Milwaukee since he's in Pensacola, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Yes, that's right. Good morning, Andrew. I am here. I thought about taking about 5 seconds just to make you nervous, but didn't do it.
Nothing makes me nervous.
Federal investigators say they still have not identified a motive in the attempted assassination of former President Trump. The FBI handling that investigation, they've now reportedly completed searching Crooks and his family's Pennsylvania home. They finished their search Monday. Cleanup crews are going to be busy today after multiple tornadoes and severe storms hit the Chicago area. The National Weather Service reported those tornadoes touched down last night. Tornadoes were reported at both O'Hare and Midway airports.
Wow. I would have, you know, we were in Milwaukee and the weather on Sunday night was very bad here. And, of course, we're about, 80 miles north of Chicago here. So they had bad weather there. We had sprinkles here. So nothing like that at all here last night, thank goodness. So obviously we hope that cleanup goes well. If you happen to miss it yesterday, coming up next, we're going to replay the interview we did with Chip Simmons. Extensive discussion of the Secret Service failures at the event on Saturday.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Please welcome Donald J. Trump.
President Trump and his bandaged ear welcomed at the Republican National Convention by thousands of supporters less than 2 days after he was nearly assassinated. He officially became the 2024 Republican nominee and announced Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate.
He just said, look, I think I'm going to go save this country. I think you're the guy who can help me in the best way. You can help me govern. You can help me win.
The 39-year-old was first elected to the Senate back in 2022. President Biden saying it was a mistake to tell donors that he wanted to put former President Trump in a bullseye, telling NBC's Lester Holt.
How do you talk about the threat to democracy, which is real, when a president says things like he says? Do you just not say anything because it may incite somebody?
America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. It is 78 degrees this morning, partly cloudy skies. A 67-year-old Milton woman has died after a single vehicle crash on State Road 87 yesterday. The Florida Highway Patrol says that woman was driving when her vehicle went off the road into some garbage cans, then hit an embankment. Troopers say the vehicle then went airborne and rolled. The woman was ejected from the front passenger seat. She was flown to a hospital due to serious injuries, and she passed away at the hospital. Well, the state attorney's office says an indictment has now been handed down for one of the suspects in a drive-by shooting that led to the death of a 70-year-old woman in Escambia County. Prosecutors say Jaquarius Etheridge has now been indicted on multiple charges, including first-degree premeditated murder. Etheridge is scheduled to be arraigned this Friday. That shooting happened June 24th on Aris Boulevard that led to the death of 70-year-old Myra Hayes. The second suspect, Terrence Gross Jr., is also charged. And the third, Trevion Moten, died after jumping off of the Escambia River Bridge while attempting to flee from law enforcement. The Escambia School District is looking to fill several positions. They're going to be hosting a job fair later this month. The district reportedly has vacancies in all education support departments, including food services, custodial, maintenance, transportation, and substitute teaching positions. The job fair will be held Monday, July 29th from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. at the J.E. Hall Center on Tahar Drive. For more information, check out the school district website at escambiaschools.org. Well, legal scholars weighing in after former President Trump's classified documents case was dismissed. Harvard constitutional attorney Alan Dershowitz says it could impact Trump's other pending cases.
You know, he did waive a classified document in front of an unauthorized person, and it was recorded. So that was their strongest case on the merits, and having that thrown out is a very significant win for Trump.
Judge Cannon found the appointment of special counsel Jack Smith violated the Constitution. Dershowitz believes the case will not be retried anytime soon either, at least before the election. And Senator Marco Rubio says he believes Donald Trump made a good choice for vice president. That's what Rubio posted on X yesterday after Ohio Senator J.D. Vance was selected as Trump's running mate. Rubio wrote that Americans will soon see Vance as is an incredibly intelligent and talented man who's completely committed to making America great again. It is 534 at News Radio Pensacola. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be seeing scattered showers and thunderstorms as we go through the day today. 60% chance of rain overall. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies with temperatures warming up near 92 degrees. Heat advisory in place this afternoon, and then overnight temperatures dropping near 78. For Wednesday, 70% chance of rain, high near 92. Wednesday night temperatures dropping near 77. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 77 degrees in Pensacola. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola.
I'm Chad Robison with Your Money Now. As many parents recover from the sticker shock of summer camp expenses, which average about $87 a day this year, they're facing another dreaded retail ritual, back-to-school shopping, which now rivals the year-end holidays in terms of household spending. Families with elementary to high school-aged kids expect to spend an average of $875 in the lead-up to the first day on clothing, shoes, electronics, and school supplies, according to the National Retail Federation. As Stellantis gears up to launch several EV models this year, the owner of the Jeep, Ram, Chrysler, Dodge, and Fiat brands is offering buyers a choice of a home charging unit or $600 worth of credits as part of the package. The home charging package includes a level 2 charging unit, with the buyers picking up the cost of installation. Wall Street started the week off on the right foot. The Dow Jones Industrial Average set a new record, up 210 points. The NASDAQ rose 74.
Hey, Pensacola, Gary from Warrior Beer Company, inviting you to come out and enjoy great beer, great food, great fun. Warrior Beer Company has Military Open Mic Monday, Trivia Tuesday, Karaoke Wednesdays, Singo Bingo on Thursdays, and live music all weekend. We have 20 different brews and ciders. We are located just west of Blue Angel Parkway on Sereno Road. Always remember, from freedom fighters to everyday warriors, we got your six.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, Pensacola's own On the Rocks takes all your musical favorites, shakes it up, twists it, then adds their own unique and special flavors and serves it to you on the rocks. Brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority tonight.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Saturday, July 13th.
Take a look at what happened.
An attempted assassination of former President Trump.
For those of you just tuning in here, the president was having a rally in Pennsylvania. He was just addressing a crowd, and when he winced and grabbed his ear, then he heard the shot and went down.
Out of all of the broadcast media in Pensacola, only one had full team coverage.
We do know that Donald Trump is fine.
News Radio Pensacola. Informative. Local. Dependable.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Can I just say one thing, Bobby, is I appreciate that we're in the central time zone. I don't have to do a translation because it would be so weird to be in, Boston or something. And even if we go to the DNC in Chicago, same thing. So it's nice to be in the same time zone, even though we are several hundred miles up to the north in Milwaukee, reporting from the RNC for News Radio Pensacola. Yesterday, yesterday we had a chance to speak with Sheriff Chip Simmons, who is, of course, very involved in protective details over the course of years, and he was the commanding officer of the SWAT team when he was on PPD. I know it's a weird thing to have talked to him on a Monday, but I thought, given his expertise and obviously the attempted assassination over the weekend, it was relevant. And, you know, I mean, very, very interesting interview we had with him yesterday. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you doing?
I mean, I think I'm with the whole country. We're doing as well as we can and still really processing what almost happened to the former president. Now, you and I will still be talking tomorrow about Escambia County matters and, you know, criminal matters, but I wanted to have you on today because you were the commanding officer for the SWAT team. You were the head of the SWAT team at PPD. You have done a lot of presidential events and other high-security events, and, of course, as the sheriff of Escambia County. To me, you are a subject matter expert on these things, and I wanted to learn from you what you thought about this. And before we get into sort of all the analysis, when you first saw the video and heard the shots, you know, six or maybe seven shots, what did you think? What was your initial response to that?
Well, I mean, my response is probably like many responses. How could this happen? You're in a level of shock at what you're seeing because, from our perspective at least, it is a monster failure on a couple of fronts. The fact that anyone could even make that attempt, someone could have the opportunity to take a shot, or someone in a crowd could have make an effort on the life of a protectee, in this case, the former president. I think it's unbelievable. You shake your head because these things should not happen. I heard your intro, someone saying, well, it's too early to tell if there's a failure. No. They should even make an attempt. That's their plan, is that not that someone survives, although that's ultimately the purpose. But I think that the fact that someone was able to make a shot shows that there was a monster failure.
Yeah, I had that same reaction. I thought, you know what, I would have loved to hear from the Secret Service or the FBI. I mean, Secret Service would have been the most appropriate, would be to say this was absolutely a catastrophic failure, and we're going to try to figure out what happened. But you can't call it anything else because you have one goal. One goal is that nobody gets to make an attempt on the life of the protectee, right?
That's exactly right. I know that, you know, going way back to George H.W. Bush, he was at the Civic Center, and he stayed at the Hilton right across the street. And just from him getting from the hotel to the car, which was probably 40 feet away, they had so much advanced team evaluation, and they had so many meetings just for that small period because they were afraid that there might be people, you know, near in and around the Civic Center. So to know firsthand what they do and what they look for, and then seeing that someone still had an opportunity to take that shot, and there was, to me, there were so many failures here. When you do that evaluation, you take a look at what the vulnerabilities are. And then on the day of, early that morning, you will secure those locations. So no one should have ever been able to get near that building, certainly not the top of that building, whether it's Secret Service agents or whether it's the locals that are there to provide support. Those buildings are secured, so no one can get up on top of there. When I think it was President Obama came from, maybe it was President Bush, flew into NAS, and then they had a large caravan all the way to the Civic Center. We blocked down roadways hours in advance so that people couldn't, you know, come up there with a bomb or couldn't set up a van of some sort. We were towing cars and locking down roadways hours in advance. And once it's locked down, it's locked down.
You know, and that was my thought, too, is that level of prevention, like you say, hours in advance, securing, towing, blocking. You know, I was thinking the same thing about the building. I don't know how on earth he was inside the building to begin with, because that's all secured, taped, protected. You just can't. Nobody goes in these buildings. And in this scene, if you look at the aerials, you have, you know, four or five different buildings that would seem to be within the real danger range kind of concern. How any of them could have had a person, let alone inside, but up on the roof with a gun. It's amazing.
Yeah, and additionally, again, I mentioned the first President Bush. We were actually stationed. I was actually stationed on top of the Hilton, and that's what they would do. They would station people on top of buildings to secure it. I mean, when you secure it, I'm not talking about just securing it from the ground level. I'm talking about being up there so no one else can get up there. You know, there's no bad guys can get up there if you're up there. And as I understand, that there may have been a local that had, you know, that approached them or confronted them. And then for some reason, there was no communication. The Secret Service should have known that they were going in there to investigate a potential person on a roof. They should have known who was on what roof. What one of the local law enforcement officers would have been with their channels, communication channels, would have been in a room with Secret Service relaying all the information. So Secret Service would have known there was a, you know, an indication of someone on the roof. They would have known that the locals were going to check it out. All that information would have been known. And I just don't understand how this could happen, knowing the protocols that should have been set forth and knowing, you know, the coordination that typically takes place.
I'm so glad you said that, because that was my same question. Is I would assume, like, if people are yelling, there's a guy on the roof with a gun, and a cop is climbing up whatever access point to get up there and look over the edge, and then according to the reports, he saw him and then got the gun pointed at him and he retreated back down. I'm thinking, my God, the Secret Service should have known that he was going up there. They should have been on constant radio contact. He should have been prepared for what he might encounter at the top. And I don't know whether it's, you know, you see something, I would assume there's a code word. You can yell the code word. You can make a massive noise. Like, nothing, like, all of this crazy inaction is taking place in a situation that you, this is what you train for, literally. And I could imagine it if it was maybe just some small town police department doing the security, but this is the one thing the Secret Service does. And I'm so glad that you're kind of confirming all of my same questions about how this didn't happen. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, broadcasting to you live from Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention. But on the phone with us, we have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons, former SWAT team commander for PPD. And as you have heard him mention a couple of times, involved in the planning and the action of protecting the president several different times when presidents have come to Pensacola. Chip, what I am hearing from you, and feel free to always correct me anytime you hear me say something wrong, is you find it at every step of the way inconceivable that this event took place the way it did. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. From the advance team, what I'm talking about is Secret Service brings a team in a couple days early, and then typically our snipers and our SWAT team members will go drive them around the scene, the site. And then they will make their own evaluation, and then they will post people at different locations. Again, a lot of times that is locals because they don't have enough. They haven't had enough in the past. So, I think that from the very beginning, the advanced team's evaluation, from the communications that occurred during the event. And let me just say this. There are oftentimes this communication. I'll just share with you this. There's a lot of times information is gathered. You know, they talk a lot about, do you see that van that's close to the area? Have someone checked that out? So there's a lot of times that anything suspicious, you know, it's gone over the communications, and people understand in the command room or command post that someone's going to check that out. And that's, so they should be on heightened alert. They should wait and listen to see what becomes of that. And so I think that is the communication problem. And then you got the issue with a little bit of a clumsy. I think that they had a very courageous, the people that first got there, his personal protectors, if you will, they got there pretty quickly. And then it was a little bit clumsy and awkward getting to the car.
Yeah.
But again, nothing really goes as planned. But I think there could have been some improvement in that as well.
Is there any other part of this? And you've done a great job of helping us understand from your experience, you know, where things went wrong. Is there any other part of this that surprised you? Like you said, I'm surprised they didn't have physical presence up on that roof. I mean, 150, 160 yards is well within what I would consider as a civilian amateur, the high danger zone for a sniper to be located. You know, it's good to have a sniper on the roof behind the president, but, you know, I just couldn't fathom that roof isn't secure.
Well, you know, and also what people aren't, I didn't see all the pictures that everyone has probably seen, but there were snipers, at least two sets. And oftentimes they'll have a spotter, someone that's only looking through a high power binoculars, obviously, looking for other threats. So they're not just looking for other buildings, the other snipers, I should say. They're also looking for threats within the crowd. So, I didn't see that. I'm sure they had it somewhere. You're asking about what I think are the failures. I think that it's pretty obvious. It played out on national television what took place, and and what who had an opportunity to take out the life to take the life of the former president.
I'm assuming I got a good question here from a listener. I'm assuming that the protectee. Well, you tell me, is the protectee at all involved in any of these drills, or are they just show up and do your business and we'll protect you? Do they get trained on how to react, how to respond, what to do?
If they take part in it, that would be outside of the local law enforcement. That the protectee hardly ever, if I'm not aware of any time where the protectee would say, hey, I don't want this, I don't want that. Now, on scene, I was with President Obama at Pensacola NAS when he came in the last time, and he will, obviously the president or the protectee would decide how they want to, you know, how they want to move, when they want to move, who they want to talk to, and then the Secret Service will have to work around them. Yeah. So I wouldn't be aware if the protectee said, hey, I only want this or I only want that. I can't imagine them directing the snipers or the advance team. I would think the only thing that they would have any influence on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant more. Not do they tell them what to do, but are they trained on what to do or how to respond? You know what I mean? Are they a part of the practice at all?
I wouldn't be having not worked for the Secret Service. Wouldn't know what their protocols are, but okay. I can't imagine them not going over what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think President Trump, if you noticed, he immediately went down. Not from the shot to the ear, but he went down.
He crouched. Yeah.
That's obviously make yourself less of a target. And so I'm certain part of that is instinct, and part of that is likely just the training or the expectations from the Secret Service over the course of the years that he's been a protectee.
Okay. So I hate to ask this question. I genuinely hate to ask this question, but it seems like the only natural next question to ask. You've explained how nothing makes sense. It all seems to run contrary to the practice and protocol of the Secret Service, as you've understood it from your own experience in dealing with these protective situations. So if that's the case, obviously lots of people are speculating, well, how did this happen? It doesn't seem plausible to say that the highly professional Secret Service could possibly make so many mistakes by accident, that all of this could just happen. Do you start to wonder if there was something more than just one guy trying to do this and then they responded and there was this series of cataclysmic failures? Do you wonder about there being something more than just what we believe?
I think while I'm prepared to say that, again, this is a monster or catastrophic failure on a number of fronts, I'm not so sure. Again, there are some things that I may not know. Mm-hmm. I'm not prepared to say that it is a conspiracy. I wouldn't say, oh, absolutely, there couldn't be, because there are so many obvious things that could have taken place and should have taken place to prevent even the single shot. I'd have to know what the officer that confronted him, or what their thought was, what that scenario was, because that to me is important, because you had a law enforcement officer that I'm assuming talked to, command post. And then they still confronted, or then they went to confront an individual. So I'm not prepared to say that it's a conspiracy. I can tell you that there are some answers to be, or some questions to be asked, and hopefully some answers to be given. I think that there are some careers in jeopardy, obviously, mm-hmm. and I'm certainly prepared to say that they need never, protect an individual again. Some people that are in charge of that, but I'm not prepared to say. Okay. At this point, whether it's a conspiracy.
Hey, just a very quick thing that I hate. We're running out of time on this, but is that range with an AR-15, assuming he had some kind of a scope on there, is it reasonable to believe that a kid taking his dad's gun, shooting at that range, that getting the results he got is realistic for his level of training or whatever? I mean, I know that's a highly speculative question.
It is. I would think that they're very effective at that range. I will tell you that. Those weapons, whether it's just the iron sights or if there was a scope, certainly if there was a scope, I think that those are very effective weapons. We carry similar weapons, and we train with similar weapons. And we have taken, as you know, we've taken shots at maybe not 130 yards, but certainly 50 yards or so at terrorists ourselves. So I think that those weapons are very effective at that range.
Well, that helps. Thank you so much. Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff, thank you so much for the very candid comments this morning, and certainly for bringing your expertise. And as it reminds us all, the level of professionalism and expertise that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office brings to keeping us and any dignitaries who visit Pensacola safe. Sir, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again tomorrow about more local things. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Yeah, so we are going to have the sheriff will be on again today talking about Escambia County related matters. But obviously, given his background expertise and the prominence of the news story about the shooting over the weekend, obviously it was very valuable to talk to him. And in fact, did a follow-up interview about 20 minutes after this one yesterday with Sheriff Bob Johnson from Santa Rosa County. And he, of course, did protective detail for Reagan. And he had even more blunt words about the Secret Service. And we're going to actually give you a chance to hear that interview coming up at 6:35. I wouldn't normally replay an interview at that time, but I thought it was so important for you to be able to hear from our local sheriffs who have such great expertise on this particular subject matter. I am Andrew McKay from Wisconsin. We are in Milwaukee this morning, and did get a chance to get into the convention last night and see some of the sights and sounds, and no pepper spray. Very few demonstrators. Like, I was thinking that there'd be protesters of some kind. And we weren't around the convention all day walking around, so, you know, we may have missed them. But the only protesters we saw the whole day were some pro-life protesters right outside the security perimeter at night as we were walking out. And they were basically demanding a from-conception life amendment national ban on abortion from the moment of conception. And there were, 10 of them, maybe. And they were very polite, and they were sort of chanting, telling the GOP that that's what they wanted. We didn't see any other protesters the whole entire day. They may have been there. It's hard to cover all of Milwaukee. But, you know, that was kind of surprising to me, is that those were the ones that we actually wound up seeing. 5:55 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
You know, recently one of our salespeople came to me and said, Andrew, do you feel comfortable representing Pensacola State College? I'm like, comfortable? I love PSC. Of course I can. You bet. My family has had a great experience there. We have three boys who we homeschooled, okay? My wife homeschooled, but still, you get the point. And two of them have now gone to university, but they started at PSC, dual enrolled as high school students. So homeschool kids taking college classes for high school and college credit for free, because that's how dual enrollment works. No cost for books or classes. Teachers who understood teaching and were motivated by teaching. I used to teach at community college and university. I'm telling you, community college teachers are the best. They're great. And also, you know, afford like reasonable class sizes. They work with you on schedule if you have any questions or problems. Everybody's very eager to help. Like, it was the great transitional experience for both of my boys, who have now gone to college, university, with a year and a half of college credit under their belt. Campuses in Pensacola, Warrington, Milton, Century, South Santa Rosa Center, Downtown Pensacola, and Santa Rosa Industrial Park East. Find out what PSC can do to help you reach your future goals at pensacolastate.edu.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out how this Thursday morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this Thursday morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Join Freedom's Found Coffee on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 9 a.m. Freedom's Found Coffee founder and combat veteran Raymond Hare will share the mission of Pensacola's new coffee shop and support offered to the military, veteran, and first responder community. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Rhode Island cast 19 votes.
Choosing the leader of our nation is more important than ever. It's important to you, so it's important to us. That's why Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay will be broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention. Hear the news first right here on News Radio Pensacola, direct from Milwaukee every morning. This RNC convention is poised to be one of the most important ever. Tune in each morning to hear Andrew McKay with all the newsmakers. Brought to you by Barbary Plumbing, Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, and DeFranco Gas Company.
The Republican National Convention is going on right now in Milwaukee, and News Radio Pensacola is there. Be sure to tune in to Pensacola Morning News and Pensacola Right Now for all of your updates.
1, 2, 3, they're gonna run back to me, 'cause I'm the best baby that they never gotta keep. 1, 2, 3.
they're gonna run back to me. They always wanna come, but they never wanna leave.
Good morning, 5:58 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay, broadcasting from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. David Wayne is in the newsroom back at home base in Pensacola with a quick headline for us. David?
Sure. Well, the Uvalde, Texas School District and Uvalde County Sheriff's Office in Texas now have 20 days to release records about the police response to the 2022 school shooting. That's after a judge's ruling yesterday. A group of media outlets had sued for access to body cam footage, emails, 911 calls, and other communications related to the shooting.
Very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. We'll be back in just a minute with convention coverage.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
One of the suspects in that drive-by shooting on Harris Boulevard last month has now been indicted on multiple charges. We'll have more on that after this update from Fox News Local News at 6:05.